And now for something completely different.
Smoke medical weed every day.
The following thoughts on Hoffy Hour represent Ryan Hoffy and Fastit. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoppy Hour.
He's the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoppy Hour.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
What's up? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and let's get right into it. You can hear this man every morning on Q105 104.7 FM in Tampa Bay, the host of the MJ Morning Show. MJ is live on Hoppy Hour. What's up, man?
Dude, you were working with us. We were training you to be a backup to our producer, and then you fled. What the hell happened?
Do you really want to know what happened?
Yes. They probably didn't pay enough money. They probably gave you like 3 hours a week, and you probably couldn't even put a gallon of gas in your car.
Well, it was I couldn't afford to work there. The paychecks were very low. I love Tyson and Rick Thomas, but there was one promotion event, and I've talked to Tyson and Rick, and I'm good, but there was one on-air talent who kind of threw people under the bus, and it wasn't our fault that equipment wasn't working, and I just kind of freaked out, because it wasn't our fault. It's not a person at Q105. I don't want to say who it is, but it was a certain person who complained about the promotions team, and then everybody was mad, and I was looking at my bank account, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, I love Beasley.
So you said, what? Take this job and shove it.
Yeah, essentially. And everybody was mad. And I was like,
Hold on. Explain. So it wasn't a Q105 or a Beasley employee that got up in your crap. Who complained about you?
It wasn't.
This is where you talk about. This is where you talk about this kind of crap.
It may have been Lana.
I've known her for years. I've never had one inch of issues or problems with her. No, zero. I've always had a great relationship with Lana.
I mean, I don't know. She just like there was miscommunication. The QIK team wants the promotions team to be this certain way, but when you have technology that's old, things don't go as well, and there was just miscommunication. I don't regret leaving a job. I definitely would have done it differently, but it was like, come on, like, if the generator turns off when it's 105 out, that's not the promotions, that's not the promotions team's fault.
Ryan, I was going to say, what kind of freaking technology are you talking about? You show up with a radio station van, you set up a card table, and you put a freaking tablecloth on the table. I mean, so the generator cut out, and what, their microphone or their speaker stopped working? What the hell caused this whole thing?
So what happened was she was giving out tickets at the at the Florida grounds or whatever, and she had to speak and not use the microphone, and then she complained to Tyson and everybody, and I was just like, it's 105 out because it wasn't even winter yet. It's not our fault that the generator turned off. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, the fun and games of radio, folks, and radio in 2024. Yeah, baby.
How's everything going with the morning show? I now have a day job working at another radio company. It's not Cox Media and it's not iHeart, but I keep it low key because I just try to.
Hey, Hoppy, you're running out of places to work in town. Come on, man.
I'm doing well, and when I'm driving, when I'm driving to work, I listen to you every morning. And what I like about your show is you're very energetic, driving across the bridge, because I've always worked in St. Pete. So driving across the bridge, having to go to Tampa, I totally get the 9-to-5 grind of sitting in traffic. And what I like is when you're talking, you're waking me up. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't want to put, I don't want you to put you to sleep. Yeah, of course. Listen, I try to deliver energy. I have a good time in there. We go in there every day. We have a pile of stuff that we think is interesting. And luckily, over the years, it seems that the bulk of the audience seems to like what I find and what we find is interesting. And that's the plan. I don't want to put people to sleep. I don't want them to drive off the bridge or, you know, fall asleep at the wheel. I just want to entertain people. I want to have fun and just talk about things that are relevant, talk about things that are interesting in our lives. And hopefully the listener is interested. It just seems that over the years with the MJ and BJ show for years, then the MJ morning show. And it just seems that, you know, we have a decent formula.
So when I made the post on Facebook that I was going to be interviewing you, many listeners of my show and from my jobs over the years, they all said, oh, I have an MJ and BJ CD, or, oh, I have an MJ Morning Show CD from back in the day. How crazy is it to think, for example, when I worked with Mo Bounce at many gigs, he talked about how when you would have CD signings that you had like the whole place packed. How crazy was that in the moment?
Yeah, that was great. You know, we did these crotchety old man CDs, you know, the crank calls, the whole Milton Fudge Cow deal, the, oh, thank God you've answered. And, you know, a couple of things regarding those CDs. First of all, we sold a shitload of, can I say that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I can't say that on Q105, but on your podcast I can, unless you play this on the radio station working on now. But we sold a ton of these CDs. We had, I think, like 7 or 8 different CDs out over the years. We sold hundreds of thousands of copies. And you know what was amazing is my deal provided that we kept the money. This is like unheard of today. The radio company back then, it was J-Core, and then it became Clear Channel. They got nothing. they got none of the proceeds. It was, the merchandising was 100% mine. So I like to tell people that if you bought a CD, thank you. You helped build my house in South Tampa. So I'm very appreciative. But seriously, people still send me pictures. Hey, MJ, I was at a thrift shop in Clearwater and I found this for 50 cents in the bargain CD bin. But I hear it all the time. I was just at Ray J with my wife. We went to see Sting and Billy Joel. And I had 150 people come up to me just as we're walking in, walking around, walking to our seats. You know, I took dozens of pictures and it really was fantastic. You know, I love interacting. I have no issue with anyone coming up to me anywhere, any place, you know, unless maybe if I'm at a funeral or something. But I have no issue with somebody, you know, coming by and saying hello, spending some time talking to that listener, because, listen, that's the individual that I'm trying to reach every day. And they've been a part of, obviously, the show's success over the years. So I've got no issue with it. But as far as the CDs, I have people all the time. They'll send me pictures. I'll get a direct message on Instagram. By the way, I'm certified MJ Radio on Instagram. Give me a follow. But all people send me pictures, email. People will send me a Snapchat. Hey, I was going through, my brother's stuff or whatever, and I found these CDs. I'll get pictures all the time. People still remember these CDs, still love the CDs. The crotchety old man, if you bought 1 or 2 or 5 or all 7, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Where did you come up with the idea of the crotchety old man calls?
Listen, crank calls are as old as, the telephone itself. So it's, you know, a crank call is not original. You know, as a teenager, before caller ID, you know what? Caller ID like ruined things.
Yeah, it did.
But there's a funny story about our calls and where radio is today with some of the skits and stunts that some radio stations still pull off, some of the so-called benchmark segments. You know, you got like War of the Roses. And you know, these days, you can't do those these days with real callers. Yeah, with my crotchety old man calls, those were real. And I would spend hours in the studio. Sometimes I would have to call 8, 10, 12 places before I could get somebody to bite. You know, there's, for instance, there's a classic one, the Tickle Me Elmo wood, where I called, it was a Kmart or a Walmart, and I think it was in Arkansas, actually. And it took me like 10 phone calls, and finally I got a guy to bite. And the premise of that was that particular year you had a whole bunch of, you know, hot toys, including the Tickle Me Elwood doll. And it was like three different things. And I kept asking the guy for all of these toys, and he had to tell me that they were sold out. And the call ends with me, you know, shooting myself because you hear a bullet, you know, a gun go off on the phone. And the guy's like, oh, my God. And actually, that was like two different calls that were pieced together, because I got the, like, I used the beginning of one call where they were transferring me to the toy department. And then I finally got this guy that bit. But that took me like 5 hours to put that call together. But those calls were real. Those were crank calls that were real phone calls, not like the phony ones that radio morning shows have to do today because of the FCC and disclosure that you're recording. And this is also something that I did back in the day. Hey, remember the Yellow Pages? I mean,
yeah.
Nobody knows. You know, my kids have no idea. My daughter, Chloe, is 22. My son is 9. They have no idea what the Yellow Pages are. Yeah, what are the Yellow Pages? But, you know, back in the 90s, you know, whenever I would travel, Ryan, if I went to a city on vacation or I was away on business, I would always rip off the Yellow Pages out of the hotel room and I would take it. So I had a whole stack of Yellow Pages, and I would use those, you know, whatever concept, if I was trying to call a trash removal company or the porta potty company, I would just use the Yellow Pages and just find businesses that had ads or listings. And that's where I'd begin. Once I had the concept, then I needed to obviously find someone to crank. And most of those came out of Yellow Pages from all over the United States.
Now, what's the most trouble you've ever gotten into? Like, did you ever get an FCC fine?
Yeah, not for any of the phone calls. We were never, I was amazed that we never, ever got busted for any of those crotchety old man calls. But we did get in trouble twice. Nicolette Sheridan, the actress, we got a hold of her phone number and we called her up live on the air. And that resulted in a $10,000 FCC fine. The company paid it. You know, I had my wrist slapped and, hey, don't do that again. So that was the only FCC fine that I've ever gotten in my entire career. I started as a 16-year-old in Chesapeake, Virginia in 1982. Here we are in 2024. So I've been doing this for, 42 years, a long freaking time. The only FCC fine was just a non-disclosure of putting somebody on the air without their knowledge, and that was Nicolette Sheridan. It was a $10,000 fine. And J-Core, maybe it was Clear Channel at that point. Maybe Clear Channel had bought J-Core. That was the only fine that I ever got. The other celebrity, which it could have resulted in a fine, but it didn't, is we got a hold of Jerry Seinfeld's phone number at his palatial, gorgeous home in Malibu on the coast out in California. And we, like, once a week for about a month and a half, we were calling him at about 7 a.m. we were calling him at about 7 a.m. Tampa time, which was 4 a.m. out in California. And he'd pick up the phone. We'd wake up Jerry Seinfeld, and we were doing this for like a month and a half. And, you know, he'd talk for a second. Who is this? Why are you calling me? And then he'd hang up the phone. And I knew I was playing with fire. The final phone call that we made to Jerry Seinfeld, he's like, hey, guys, I get it. And he's not a dumb guy. He's a smart guy. And he's like, I get it. You're obviously a radio morning show. You got a hold of my phone number. Ah, man, tell me who you are, and I'll play along. I'm like, oh, should I do it? Should I not? I'm like, all right, this is 50-50. But probably more like 90-10, that he's going to totally screw us over. But I said, what the hell? So he says, tell me who you are. And I said, all right, we're MJ. This was back when I was with BJ. I'm like, all right, it's the MJ and BJ show on 93.3 FLZ out of Tampa. Yeah, this is like 1997, maybe 98. This is when Seinfeld was on fire, like number one show Thursday nights on NBC. And I said, yeah, with the MJ and BJ show Tampa. Anyway, the minute I said MJ and BJ show Tampa, click, he hangs up on us. I knew in the back of my head the guy wasn't going to play along. So later that day, we get a phone call from Randy Michaels. And Randy Michaels was the CEO of J-Core, and then he was one of the big guys at Clear Channel. And I think it might have been the later days of J-Core, just before Clear Channel. And Randy Michaels says, hey, I just got a call from Jerry Seinfeld. So Jerry called the CEO of our radio company, and he said, these morons have been waking me up for like a month and a half, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I want them fired.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah, and Randy Michaels says, I can't fire them. They're one of the top radio shows in the market, one of the top radio shows in the entire company. I can't fire them. Jerry says, I want you to fire these guys. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm out here in Los Angeles. I'll do a free comedy show for 102.7 Kiss FM. I'll do a free comedy show if you fire these guys. What do you want? What do you need? I'll show up at a corporate event. He wanted us fired so badly, he was going to do a free gig for one of our other radio stations or some type of a sales meeting somewhere to get us fired. And listen, I'm highly appreciative to this day that Randy Michaels told Jerry Seinfeld, listen, I will make sure they don't call you again and wake you up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but I'm not firing MJ and BJ. Not going to happen. But that was another time that I thought that maybe we'd get fired, because all Jerry had to do was call the FCC and complain, but he never did, never went that route. So we were never fined. It was only the Nicolette Sheridan phone call that we got a fine for.
Now, how did you first meet BJ?
Well, BJ was working at FLZ. Well, it was the Power Pig, obviously. In 1989, the Power Pig went on the air, and they had a couple of different morning shows during the period. It was in early 94, and I was over in West Palm Beach, and I was doing mornings on 95.5 WOVV, which then became Star 95.5. It was my first morning show. And I had come from New York. I had worked with Scott Shannon, who people might know from years ago. He invented the morning zoo right here in Tampa on Q105. So it's kind of interesting. I've come from full circle all the way back to Q105 after working at 93. And I worked for Shannon for about 4 years. 2 years out in Los Angeles, and I was like a 23-year-old punk. He hired me from Virginia Beach. And here I'm going from Norfolk, Virginia Beach to Los Angeles, California in the late 80s, early 90s. Then I left L.A. with him when Pirate collapsed and went back to WPLJ in New York for a couple of years. And then I said, listen, I want to do my own morning show. I want to get back on the air, because I had been a nighttime guy for years. I want to get back on the air. Mornings is where the money is. So I was able to leave New York and get my first morning show in West Palm Beach. And that's how I met BJ, because it was like the first week of January of 1994. I get a phone call from Mark Chase, who, some people might know. Mark Chase was part of the Three Little Pigs, the old morning show years ago on the Power Pig. And he called me and said, listen, I'm going to be moving to Cincinnati. I'm going to be working, for corporate or whatever at Cincinnati for J-Corp. And I've heard you. I go to visit. I can't remember what it was, but several times he had driven during morning drive over in West Palm and had heard me on the air. And he said, I've heard you, and I think that you're our next morning guy. Can you come over for an interview? So a Saturday morning, this is early January of 1994, I drive up the turnpike from West Palm. I, drive across, Yeehaw Junction, State Road 60, through a beautiful Mulberry and Bartow and Lake Wales. I head into Tampa, and it was a Saturday late morning that I got there for a noon lunch appointment. And we first met at the Ringside Cafe, which just closed. It used to be on 4th Street in St. Pete.
Yeah.
Then the Ringside moved closer to downtown. And I just read in the last like month or so that they closed. So they're done. So met at the ringside for, I think we had some jalapeno poppers or something and Sprite or whatever. You know, BJ and Mark and Dave Reinhardt, who was the general manager, he was there. You know, they're drinking beers. I'm just having a Sprite. And, you know, Dave left after a bit. And then Mark Chase and BJ said, hey, let's go grab a burger. There's this famous burger place. We love it. Right up the street. Let's go. And that's my first time I ever went to El Cap on 4th Street in St. Pete, you know, the famous El Cap dive bar, great cheeseburger. And we had a burger there and you know, spent a couple hours talking there. I had a couple of burgers, loved the burger. And they said to me, and BJ was there because BJ was like the program director of the Power Pig and Chase was the operations manager. And so we have a, you know, great meeting. They're asking me about, you know, what I would do, what are my ideas, blah, blah, blah. And listen, Chase already heard me, you know, in action, live, you know, not some kind of dummied up, edited, you know, air check is what we call it in the business, where you put some of your greatest hits on a tape or whatever. Yeah, that was back when you used to send someone a cassette.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Now it's, you know, an MP3 or a wave or whatever. So at the end of, you know, having a couple of cheeseburgers, they're like, oh, listen, we'll, you know, we're interviewing some other folks. We'll get back to you in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We'll let you know where things stand. So I drive back to West Palm, and the next day, Sunday, I'm in my condo in West Palm Beach. It's Sunday. And BJ called and said, hey, you want the job? I said, yep. So it wasn't 2 weeks. It wasn't 3 weeks. It was 12 hours later, you know, 18 hours later. They called me the next day, offered me the job, and the rest is history. And within, that was, I think, like January 7th or 10th of 1994. And we actually launched the program on, I think it was February 7th of 1994. So I was out of West Palm. I turned in my notice. I resigned. Oh, man, the general manager was so pissed off because I was the program director, morning guy. I did all of the station imaging, the promos and the IDs and everything. So he had a bargain for the 50 grand a year I was making back there. So I came over to the Power Pig. That's how I met BJ. Because he was part of that morning team and he was the program director. And initially, and a lot of people don't know this, initially it was just going to be me and I was going to put together a team. And BJ just hung in the studio for the first couple of weeks just to, you know, be by my side, just to have like a little sidekick in the studio. But it was never part of the plan for BJ to be on the show every day. And after a couple of weeks of him just temporarily hanging out, I'm like, dude, you're doing a great job. I love this. We've got chemistry. There's a good synergy here. I like the MJ and BJ. It kind of works. And the rest is history. And we had a great run, 94 to 01. BJ left in 01. And then we, you know, rebranded as just the MJ Morning Show. But, you know, it's been a hell of a run between MJ and BJ 7 years and then it was up to 2012 with just the MJ Morning Show with my team, Froggy Fester. You know, collection of crazy interns over the years. Meredith, I plucked her out of Jacksonville. She was a board op at our Jacksonville affiliate. So I brought Meredith to the show, and that was in, I think, mid-2000s. And of course, Meredith, then after I shut down the MJ Morning Show in 2012, Meredith then went on and got a job quickly with Orlando on Wild, which is part of Beasley, part of the same company that owns Q105. So I see Meredith every single morning.
Now, you worked in the Gandy building, which I worked in when I was working at WDAE. What are your favorite memories of working in the Gandy building? Because when I got the tour from Tommy Chuck, there are just so many memories of MJ and BJ and the MJ Morning Show there. It's crazy.
Yeah. If we had 8 hours on this podcast, we probably couldn't get to all the stories, but there are so many things happened in that building. I could write several books on just the crazy crap that happened over the years. Of course, one of the famous ones was Fester and the turkey fryer fire.
Yeah.
In the parking lot, you know, burning a plumbing van down and, you know, us, you know, nearly getting arrested. And they wanted to charge us with arson. I'm like, oh, my God, we're going to Florida prison for 7 years. I'm like, but we did nothing wrong. It was a gutted van that was given to us. You know, we took all of the fluids out, the gas tank out, and it was just bad luck for us. It turned out that on that particular day that we did the turkey fryer stunt, and we had done that, you know, numerous times over the years, where we would just come up with this just ridiculous premise of, you know, don't fry a turkey in your living room. We'd set up a fake living room. We'd get all kinds of furniture, a throw rug, a coffee table, and then we would have the turkey fryer. And of course, you know what happens. The turkey fryer is going to ignite the whole living room on fire. And it was all based on, you know, those schmuck stories where people will fry a turkey on Thanksgiving and they'll fry it in their garage or they'll fry it in their kitchen, you know, with one of these propane fired turkey fryer, you know, cauldrons, these kettles. And of course, you got to fry it outside away from the house. So for a number of years, we did these turkey fryer fires. And, you know, there was a funny stunt, great video, great visual, sounded good on the air. And then the final one was that we got a van, an old van from Gonzalez Plumbing. Joe Gonzalez, who is still my plumber today, we got a van that he had taken out of service, and we had it towed to the radio station. And that year's premise was, whatever you do, do not fry your Thanksgiving turkey in a van. And Fester fried it in the van. You know, things obviously got out of control. Before you know it, the whole van was on fire. It was like a vehicle fire on the shoulder on 275, snarling rush hour traffic. And this what was really bad luck for us. That day, it was like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving break. It was just bad luck that day there was like a fire convention in Tampa with all of like the fire chiefs from around the state, and the state fire marshal was there. And suddenly, you know, the news breaks and they get word, oh yeah, a radio station stunt has gone wrong. There's a fully engulfed van on fire in their parking lot. So like half of the convention comes down to Gandy, including like the state fire marshal. And it was like the worst possible timing. Why these guys have to be in town? And then they wanted to turn it into a federal case. And they went to the state attorney's office and they wanted us to be prosecuted. You know, Tommy Chuck, he crapped his pants. He thought he was going to jail. And there were almost arrests made that day. Anyway, ultimately, the state attorney, Mark Ober's office at the time, Hillsborough County State Attorney, 13th Judicial, they said, listen, there's no crime here. This is not arson. We're not prosecuting this case. And they said, listen, tell MJ, make a donation to some charity and you know, some kind of a, yeah, I think I made an apology on air. I hired John Fitzgibbons, you know, the famous, former federal prosecutor. I think he was a federal prosecutor, John Fitzgibbons. You know, he was famous for the Deborah LaFave case, you know, too pretty for prison.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So hired him and he kind of smoothed things out. So I had John Fitzgibbons, and then I think Tommy Chuck and Fester had, Norman Canella or whatever his name was. Anyway, there was no crime. The state attorney said no crime. But I'll tell you what, you know, some of the, I think it was Bill Wade, who had been a friend of the show. He was like the spokesman for the Tampa Fire Department. And he had come on our show. He always came to us to help us spread the word with PSAs. And he had actually been there prior. They actually had like a fire unit standing by, I think the year before. They were in on the action. And then as soon as like the state fire marshal was called in and And they, he turned on us, man. He turned on us like Cujo. And he was a friend of the show for years. And then he turned into wanting to have us, you know, jailed. He wanted me to get like butt raped in prison is what they, it was bizarre.
Now, when you brought back the MJ Morning Show in 2020, what was the biggest difference you saw in the landscape of radio rather than, like, let's say when you did the show in the 90s?
Well, first of all, my paycheck's a lot smaller than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, obviously, there has been a lot of diversity, you know, the whole digital realm, podcasts, it's very fractured these days. So there's just a lot of different elements vying for people's attention from obviously all the streaming, all of the podcasts out there. So, you know, clearly the marketplace for people's eyes and ears has become much more scattered and fractured. Fragmented is I think the word I'm looking for. And you know, it's just it's a little harder slog to get people's attention. There's just so much out there that you're competing with. So that's probably the biggest hill to overcome is, you know, to try to break through every day and make sure that you're the number one choice for as many people as possible because there are so many options out there. You know, also from a revenue standpoint, not as much money is spent on radio these days by advertisers than in the past. And I don't know why. I think that's a mistake because when you look at all of the numbers as far as media usage, and I just saw something this week, literally in the last couple of days, I don't have it in front of me. But still, radio, it wallops TV. More people use radio as a form of media than TV, internet. You know, radio is still king as far as reach. I love radio. I believe in radio. And I think that some have begun to discount radio as being effective, but the numbers don't lie. More Americans utilize radio every week than other media sources.
What got you into radio?
Loved it as a kid. I grew up in New York City. I was born in New York City. And as a kid, I would listen to the famous WABC. It was 77 WABC, a powerhouse AM top 40 station. I remember being 4, 5, 6 years old, and I was glued to it. Just I was fascinated by the guys coming out of the little speaker, you know, talking on the radio, entertaining, all the jingles, you know, WABC. I realized at a young age that I like this. And I think by 6, I think I said to myself, you know, I want to do that when I grow up. And I did. And, you know, I got my first job when I was a teenager. My family had left New York when I was 11 and we moved down to Virginia Beach. So easier to get a job at a radio station in southeastern Virginia and, you know, in the early 80s than in New York City. So we moved to Virginia. And when I was 16 years old, I was a sophomore, 10th grade in high school. I got a job at a little AM radio station in Chesapeake, Virginia, right in the, you know, Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Newport News area. And I got a weekend job. And from there, I just moved to different stations. I kept moving up the ladder. And by my late junior year in high school, I had a job on the number one top 40 FM station. And I was doing like weekend overnights. I do like, you know, Friday night into Saturday morning, like midnight to 6 a.m. or Saturday night into Sunday morning, midnight to 6 a.m. So I worked at, I think, 3 or so radio stations. 1, 2, 3. I worked at 4 different stations in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach area. And that's how I got into radio. I knew as a kid that I wanted to do it. Got my first gig at 16, worked my way up the ladder. And, you know, boom, here I am 42 years later.
What do you think about the Radio Hall of Fame and how much would it mean to you personally if you ever made it?
I'll probably never make it because it's so political. And, you know, I haven't been a political, you know, radio industry kiss ass over the years. So I don't even think about it. Listen, I know how many people we've made happy over the years. I've done well financially. I enjoy what I do. That's the only satisfaction I need. If I get into the Radio Hall of Fame at some point, I'd be thrilled. It would be an honor. I'm not counting on it. I would guess that I probably will never get in.
Do you feel like your show changed once you got married and then had kids, or was it the same MJ Morning Show?
Well, I think from a structural standpoint, the show remained very, very constant. But when you get married, and that happened during MJ and BJ, and even when Michelle was my fiance, we'd work her into the show because always love to have the female voice or have some interesting, family adversity or funny stories or, discussing an argument that I might have had. It was real life, natural stuff. So I used Michelle during the MJ and BJ days, even before we got married. Then we got married. I used Michelle on the show. And then, of course, we had kids in beginning in 2001. Chloe was born in August of 2001. And our listeners followed Michelle's pregnancy and, the day that Chloe was born. I still have people that, and this is amazing, I still have people that will run into me and say, "Hey, I was listening to you when Chloe was born. I can't believe she's 22 and just graduated college. That's amazing." So when you have a wife, you have kids, and I integrated the whole family into the show over the years. It just gives you great content. It's a dose of reality. I think that people can relate. Because a lot of the things that I was going through with the family, other people were going through the same or similar things. And I think that it plugs you in and it kind of bonds you with the audience.
Now, I would say you made your kids famous where a lot of people know who your kids are and who your wife is. What was the key to having your kids on air, but at the same time, making sure they weren't exploited?
Yeah, good question. I always had boundaries. I personally knew the boundaries of, what I should do, what I shouldn't do. I was always concerned for the family safety, as far as, where we lived. I never discussed where the kids went to school. So I did keep, I kept a sort of a veil on certain things. So, I wasn't really concerned about their safety. And I just try to keep things within certain parameters. So, I wouldn't embarrass anybody I didn't want to go too far. And I think that I had a fairly good gauge on how to not cross any lines.
That makes sense. Cause I think you did a good job of having them on air, but not like making fun of them or saying too much information. Cause there's some shows that just seem like they use their kids too much where it's like they make them too famous. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Listen, I think I know what you're talking about. And I think that again, that I had a good gauge and I set parameters. Every once in a while I'd cross a line with Michelle or I'd piss Michelle off, something I revealed on the air. I'd get home and she's like giving me the silent treatment.
So I
probably a couple of times I pissed off Michelle, but I never got to the point with the kids. I was always more protective of the kids. And I had them on the air, occasionally. For the most part, I was just telling stories about being a father and things that occurred. So over the years, I really talk more about the kids versus having them on the show.
Now, for people that have listened to this interview and they want to check out your morning show, how can people listen to the MJ Morning Show?
Well, obviously, you've got 104.7, the traditional terrestrial FM, your car radio, if you got a clock radio still, or you know, whatever. You got a hurricane radio with a flashlight built in.
You just
tune to 104.7 FM. It's Q105, but it's 104.7 FM. That's, you know, traditional terrestrial radio. We're on all of the apps. So all of the streaming apps, we're on those. You can just do a search for Listen Live for Q105, MJ Morning Show, Tampa Bay. And, you know, we're on what, the iHeart app, the Odyssey app. We're on the TuneIn app. We have our own streaming where you can go to mjmorningshow.com. And at the upper right-hand corner, it says Listen Live. You click the button. You can listen on your phone, listen on your laptop, whatever. And then, you know, through the Alexa speaker deals, which I don't want that thing in my house, which I don't have.
Yeah.
So, but many people do. And then, of course, the show is podcast. Every single day by about 11 a.m., the whole show is trimmed down. All the breaks are taken out. And the whole show is podcast, cover to cover, every day. And we're on all the major podcast platforms, on Apple, on Spotify. Again, you can just type in MJ Morning Show on Q105 podcast, and you'll have all the options. And also at mjmorningshow.com, we post the podcast on the main page every single day. And then also we're on YouTube. Every single morning we have MJ TV, and from 6 to 10, you can watch our live video stream. We've got four cameras in the studio. You can see the whole team doing the show live in the studio. And that's on YouTube. So you can watch that live, or it's on demand. You can go back if you're late to the game, or you can look at the archive video. So, you know, as we're recording this at what now, it's 6:14 p.m. here.
Yeah.
In the evening, as we're recording this on a Wednesday, people can go to mjmorningshow.com right now, click on MJ TV on the top nav bar, bring up the page, and you can, you know, look at the archives. You can watch today's show, yesterday's show, watch a show from, you know, back in December. So all of that is on mjmorningshow.com. There is, Ryan, no shortage of ways to consume my product.
Yes, sir. I would say you are on the Mount Rushmore of Tampa radio. You changed the game. And what I love about you is whenever the words or whenever the letters MJ is said, people either love you or they might not like you. And that's how you know you changed the game, is when you made an impact on people's lives. So thank you for coming on Hoppy Hour. It has been a thrill talking to you for the last 42 minutes and 43 seconds.
Are you kidding me? You told me it was only going to be 20 minutes.
I know. This flew by, MJ. This flew by.
Holy crap. Well, listen, as you know, every morning from about 7:25 to about 8:50, we do over an hour and 20 minutes of nonstop MJ. So
it's crazy.
For an hour and 20 minutes from about 7:25 every morning, we go for over an hour and 20 minutes nonstop, no commercials, no music. So I'm used to, you know, yakking for a while.
Well, you are very good at it, and I'm very glad to have you on the show. So keep up the good work, MJ. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, MJ. And that was MJ from the MJ Morning Show as he called into Hoppy Hour. Now, if you've heard my voice on the Tampa radio waves over the years, my name's Ryan Hoppy, if you haven't, and I host the Hoppy Hour podcast. It's been nominated 8 times by the Creative Loafing, and I've won Best Local Podcast 2x. So go to every single major platform that has a podcast and search up Hoppy Radio. Alrighty, thank you.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. And like that, he's gone.